How can I finance my flight training without incurring significant debt? What are the pros and cons of using a flight simulator? There's a lot of pros and a lot of cons. I will tell you that some of the best, do you know what the next two frequencies are going to be or that you expect them to be? Can you program those in before your flight? Literally have as much done as possible because the two most critical phases of flight. Welcome to the Aviation Mentors Podcast, the podcast that takes your dreams of flight and turns it into reality.
Sponsored by Strass Financial, financing your flight training.
For pilots, by pilots. I'm Brandon Martini, a commercial pilot and flight instructor.
And I'm Carson Vasquez, I'm a private pilot.
Whether you're a seasoned pilot or beginner with dreams of flight,
Aviation Mentors is your source for expert insights, industry trends, and inspiring stories.
So fasten your seatbelts and prepare for this incredible journey through the skies.
And stay connected with us on social media for exclusive content.
And visit our website at www.aviationmentors.com. And let us be your co-pilot on this adventure. Welcome back, everybody, to another awesome and amazing episode of the Aviation Mentors Podcast. Thank you so much for joining me today. If you are watching us, you might notice there is no Carson right here. But if you're listening to us on a streaming platform, we really appreciate it. Unfortunately, you won't get to hear Carson's wonderful voice today. It shall just be me. So thank you so much for joining us, like I said, and looking forward to diving into one of our most popular types of episodes, and that is just more listener questions. So Mark, our producer, gave me a list of, I think, 50 or 100, or I don't know. I didn't even scroll all the way down. That's a lot. And I've kind of tapered that list down to just probably 10 or 20 so far, at least on the first page, and probably equal to 20 on the second page. So I'm going to hit up a couple of these questions and hoping it helps some future pilots or current pilots out there staying current. And we'll go from there. First one I would love to dive into, since we are sponsored by Strass Financial, is how can I finance my flight training without incurring significant debt? That's a really interesting one. And the reason why I say that is you're going to need to incur significant debt to become a pilot. There's a lot of people that say, don't do it. Don't go get in debt to become a pilot. Pay as you go. There's some positives and negatives to both. So let's put it this way. Let's just say you become a pilot in a year because you went out and took a loan out from Strass or Sallie Mae or whatever you want to do. And you could take a $100,000 loan out. Over the lifetime, just like you going and paying on a house, I know I just did a refinance of my house today, and it says that I will pay 120% on top of my loan amount over the life of my loan if I pay it over 30 years at a 5.5% rate or whatever it was. So that means on a $500,000 house, I will pay $1.2 million for a $500,000 house. The same thing happens when you go take a loan out on a car or a student loan in particular to finance your flight training. You're going to pay a lot of interest if you pay it over the life of the loan. If you pay it off early, you will pay a significant amount lower. I don't have statistics on it because I just saw these questions right before, but it's something like if you pay one payment extra a year on a mortgage, you'd get rid of like 3 or 4 years off of your mortgage, which is phenomenal. The same thing can happen on your student loan. You can save a ton of interest, especially if you make extra payments every month and apply them directly to principal only. So the difference is whenever you're making a payment on a loan, you're typically paying interest in the beginning of the loan. This also works on cars. So if you actually say to your finance company, hey, Mr. or Ms. Finance Company, please apply an additional $100 on top of my set monthly payment and pay this direct to interest, you will pay down that product a lot faster. Now, of course, I do have a financial podcast that I talk about these things all the time, especially for investors. But I think for newer pilots, especially younger ones who are 18, 19, 20 years old, 21, even under 25, you might not have got your financial chops yet. I know they don't teach it in school. And if you went to a private school, maybe you did get taught it. But in public schools, they don't teach it, at least none that I know of. So it's probably advantageous for you to go get into debt for one reason. And I know all the Dave Ramsey fans out there are going to go crazy on me for this, but it's true. If you go and get your private pilot and over 1 year, and then you get your instrument over the second year, and you really, you go and work a second job, you go do DoorDash at night, and you really want to go finance your flight training yourself, that's fantastic. But if your goal is going to be to become a commercial pilot, just know that every year that you wait, you're losing out on the top end of your pay. Because if you want to go be a commercial pilot in an airline, let's just say that the average pay at the end of your tenure is going to be $300,000. With inflation, if you're 20 years old, that means that's 45 years from now. So it might even be more than that. It might be $400,000 is like the top end of your pay. But let's just use 300 because it's a more realistic number just for this conversation. You can make $300,000 at the top end of your pay right now. So I think it'll be much higher than that. But regardless, at the top end of your pay, each year that you take to go finish your flight training is going to cost you that amount. So if I go and spend 4 or 5 years paying as I go for $80,000 to $100,000, by the way, that's like $18,000 to $20,000 a year extra that you need to go make and then utilize for flight training. And then there's the question if you can actually finish it in 4 or 5 years, if you can actually keep yourself accountable to do that. There's a whole lot of things. A lot of things can happen in 4 or 5 years. So the odds of you finishing are very, very small. Start that off if you don't have the financing put into perspective. The second thing is, over those 4 years, a lot of things can change. Hiring environments can change. Starting pilot pay can change. All these things. But you can pretty much look at it from a year in perspective, like a year out, and you can know where the market's going, right? So if it takes you 4 or 5 years, you've lost over $1 million in earned income potential throughout your lifetime. So it's kind of worth going and getting a student loan for $100,000, even if you had to pay $300,000 back on it. Like I used with my house example, I had to pay 120% more, which equated to $1.2 million on a $500,000 house. If you had to pay 3 times or even 4 times as much on a $100,000 loan, don't you think it's worth it to finish that in a year when your income earning potential, let's just say you finish it in 4 years total if you're paying as you go, you didn't lose $900,000 in earned income potential? That just seems crazy to me that so many people are so against it. Because if you do the math, it really makes sense. On top of that, if you look at what a doctor makes compared to what a pilot makes over time, and I believe Sling Pilot Academy, they're one of our partner flight schools at Stratus, they actually have a chart that shows you your earned income potential in your early years versus earned income potential in your later years. Without investing properly, just based on earned income potential, you will make more money as a pilot than you will as a doctor, and you will have less student debt. And if we actually put in compounding interest on that debt, you'll pay a lot more money on that debt to become a doctor than you would a pilot, as well as if you're smart, you'll be able to make investments a lot earlier in your career that will be worth a lot more money in retirement than doctors do because you spend so long working hard and not making very much money as a doctor. So those are some really interesting ways and how can I or should I finance my flight training without incurring debt? I think that these are really powerful perspectives that no one ever thinks about. They just think, hey, the interest rate's 14, 15, 16, 17, 18% on a student loan when the government subsidizes student loans to lenders and they can get 3, 4, 5% on a government subsidized student loan. So people get really nervous about those things and they just see this rate or they see the total dollar amount and they get scared. And honestly, you shouldn't. You should get scared if you can't support that payment or your family or whoever signed on that loan can't support that payment. But you should not get scared about the overall debt because it's going to be worthwhile in the long run. So that's all I've got to say about the finance of flight training thing. That's a pretty powerful perspective in my opinion. And I'm hoping you can get something out of that. The next thing I wanted to touch base on, what are the pros and cons of using a flight simulator? There's a lot of pros and a lot of cons. I will tell you that some of the best young students that I ever had that were like 15, 16, 17, they were just wanted to learn to fly. They flew flight simulators in their rooms, like on their computer for years. And honestly, they were some of the best pilots that I've ever seen because they understood what happens to a plane if it goes slow, if it goes fast. They understand like, oh, if you nosedive an airplane, it will break apart, at least on the good flight simulators, right? By the way, when I say nosedive an airplane, it will break apart, I mean exceeding red line and doing all sorts of terrible things that you never do in an airplane. I'm not saying just nosedive to get out of the way of something and not exceed the critical structural limits of the airplane. That's, of course, different. But there's also some negatives to it. And I'm not talking from the perspective of using a flight simulator during your flight training. I'm talking about before. Students also have these inherent issues where now they are so into fixation on certain gauges or certain parts of the airplane that they shouldn't be fixated on in those parts or critical phases of flight. And it's just because they self-taught themselves for so many years. So it really creates really bad habits. So as long as you are coachable and you can break those habits, I think a flight simulator is fantastic prior to starting flight training. Now, the flip side of that, using a flight simulator during flight training is also very, very, very impactful. You can save a ton of money. Think about it, an airplane costs $200 an hour to go fly, and you can go get in a simulator for $70 an hour to fly. It's a lot cheaper for you. And depending on what type of simulator you are using, a lot of those hours can actually count towards your flight training. And if it doesn't count towards your flight training, it might actually count towards your ATP rating, which sometimes they don't coincide together, by the way. Depending on if your 141 or Part 61 school uses a simulator, it can be very beneficial to you as well. So the biggest thing is cost savings. Second biggest thing is, why not learn to make all your mistakes on the ground rather than go learn to make them in that expensive airplane in the air? So those are some reasons why you should go use a flight simulator. Also, nowadays, you can use a flight simulator to stay IFR current, which is fantastic. Now, if you go out of currency, then of course, you're going to have to go up with a CFII and do an IPC, which will cost you time and money, when you could just do your tracking radials and holds and your three approaches in that flight simulator all by yourself, which also saves a ton of money if you're not a frequent IFR flyer. Like myself, I'm not a frequent IFR flyer. Matter of fact, I don't think I'm current to fly IFR right now. I would actually have to go get an IPC. I'm not planning on flying IFR anytime soon because I haven't flown in a while. And now that I'm thinking about it, it's not just, I think I'm not current for IFR. I know I'm not current for IFR. So of course, I need to go get that IPC and work with the CFII, just like some of you do. And this is me with a lot of experience flying, but I live in California and Florida. And of course, there's not really much IFR flying that I want to do. A lot of the IFR flying is either low clouds or fog or thunderstorms in both of those places. And none of those need to appeal to me to want to go fly them.
You know what time it is, Carson?
Time is it, Brandon?
It's time to talk about one of our favorite companies.
Which company would that be?
Aviation Mentors is excited to be sponsored by the one and only Stratus Financial, dedicated to supporting the next generation of future aviators.
You know, Stratus Financial really understands the financial challenges that students face in pursuing their aviation dreams. That's why they offer student loans specifically tailored to aspiring pilots.
With competitive rates and flexible repayment plans, Stratus Financial helps take your aviation education to new heights.
So go visit their website today at www.stratus.finance. Just to be clear, that is not .com, it's .finance. And embark on your journey towards a sky full of possibilities.
Carson, it's time to get back to what we do best.
The show.
The next thing we're going to talk about is, what are the best strategies for managing a cockpit workload during solo flights? I'm going to tell you a couple of them. Utilize everything that you can utilize prior to the flight and have it all prepped. Have your flight plan fully prepped. I mean, if you're just doing a solo flight, like your first solo or your first cross-country solo or something, you need to go have your CFI sign off on all of that stuff. But if you're already a rated pilot, there's a lot of things you can do to reduce the workload. One, if you're using a paper map, get that paper map drawn. Make sure it is folded to a manageable size. Like, paper maps are this big, like huge, like as big as this screen. They're huge. So you might as well have that thing folded up to just your area that you're flying in, because you might not be flying in like all of Tampa area or all of Southern California, right? You might just be flying in one section of that. So I would say to fold it and make sure it's sitting in a place where you can access it really easily. You know where that is if you're flying solo? On the seat to the right of you. Or if you're CFI, on the seat to the left of you. I would put it there. Also, most people are using an electronic flight bag nowadays, like ForeFlight. I would have every single thing that you plan on doing preset into there. And there's a little button you click. It's called Pack. And it downloads all the data. You want to do that while you're on Wi-Fi, by the way. You also want to have an iPad that has a cellular connection. It just has to have the cellular chip in it, because that cellular chip has GPS, which gives you a moving map. So if you didn't already know that and you wanted to go buy an iPad for ForeFlight or another electronic flight bag, make sure it does have that feature, just an FYI. I would have everything set up in that EFB or ForeFlight, whatever you might be using. And then if you're using a glass cockpit or using a GPS or something like that, on the run-up, you should program everything into there. Now, if you're doing an IFR flight, I would call and get your IFR instructions first, then program everything in, because sometimes that changes. But what's nice about ForeFlight, if you have it all connected properly, sometimes those changes will come into ForeFlight for you. And if they go into ForeFlight and your aircraft has FlightStream by Garmin and you've got a Garmin stack, it'll actually go into ForeFlight and into your Garmin system. You don't have to do any work. You have to just click a button that says accept, 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 which is also fantastic. So having those things set up in your airplane, if you own it, that FlightStream product is really, really good if you use ForeFlight or different systems that work with that, and you also have a Garmin setup. Outside of all of that, I think you understand the theme is have everything prior set up. You also want to have your heading bug on the runway heading before you take off, right? You want to have all your radios set up prior to takeoff. Do you have your backup radio set up? Do you know what the next two frequencies are going to be or that you expect them to be? Can you program those in before your flight? literally have as much done as possible, because the two most critical phases of flight are takeoff and landing. Because if something goes wrong there, you have to get things figured out or land very, very quickly. If you're messing with your radios and messing with your map and messing with your GPS and trying to figure out where you're going after you take off, that is not the best time to do all of that stuff. Am I guilty of doing that before, not having my radio set up, and then I'm messing with things right after I take off? Of course, I'm guilty of that, and a lot of people are. But it's not the best practice, and I try not to do that ever. I try to always have everything set up. I think it's the proper way to go about things. It just helps your workload, and that's what this question was about. Like, how do you manage your cockpit workload? And it's not just while flying solo. It's while flying with other people. And if you happen to have other people with you, make sure that you are asking those other people for help. Ask them to scan and look for airplanes, and also explain to them that if an airplane is 10,000 feet away, they don't need to freak out and tell you, because then that'll put undue stress on you. Explain to them the distance on an airplane that they're trying to look for, and look for one outside and show them what that looks for, and say, hey, by the way, if you see an airplane, I want you to just point to it and tell me where it's at in a calm voice. But if you see a person's face from the cockpit, or the whites of their eyes, then I need you to tell me in a very abrupt way exactly where they're at, and explain that to your passenger. Let them know that's not necessarily going to happen, but you want to have a nice cockpit communication with your passengers, because they're also helping on the safety of flight, right? Just like the passengers in the back of an airplane are reporting people doing stupid things in the back of an airplane to the flight attendants will tell the cockpit. So everybody's part of a flight no matter what, even when you're in a two-person or a 300-person aircraft. So that's really all I have to say about managing cockpit workload. I'm sure there's other things that I'm not thinking about right now, but those are the main points. And I'm excited for you to go up and do that solo and reduce that workload like I just explained on how to do. And if you are financing your flight training, you can always reach out to Stratus or anybody else. But if you have any questions regarding how financing works or why rates are what they are or things like that, please feel free and reach out to me or Carson. You know, as we always say, you can check out our emails. It's Brandon@aviationmentors.com or Carson@aviationmentors.com. Feel free and send those emails and reach out to us. Also, if you want to find me on LinkedIn, I'm growing my network there quite a bit lately. I would be happy to add you. Just put Aviation Mentors Listener. That way I approve you on there, and I would be happy to make that connection with you there. Outside of that, as always, we need some help with spreading the word. So please click like, share, subscribe, all the great things on YouTube or anywhere you're listening or watching us on the internet. It really helps us grow the aviation community and, of course, helps us grow the podcast. There's some really cool things coming up that I'm excited to share with you. I'm working on something with the FAA soon, and hopefully it will be a fantastic addition to some safety items with the FAA. And that is my only clue I'm giving until that gets solidified and released, but I am going to be very excited the day that we get to share that. Other than that, Mark's going to put a little blurb about Aero Summit. Please make sure you check out for Aero Summit. It's May 21st through 23rd, and we will be so excited to see you there. With all of that being said, we will see you next time. Thank you so much for joining us.